from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, 40 years of KQED Public Radio. The station was purchased in 1969 for just $62,000, and it began broadcasting classical music out of a three-story Victorian on Divisadero Street in San Francisco. The change to an all-news format in 1987 was considered risky at the time. Was it a good idea? We think so, but what do you think? And how have digital technology and online broadcasting changed the medium? Our station manager will be here to look back and look ahead, and we'll play some old clips from past shows. And as always, you're invited to join the conversation. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and this week for Michael Krasny. Well, just over 40 years ago, 88.5 FM was known as KXKX FM, a station owned and operated by the San Francisco Theological Seminary. When that organization approached KQED Television about buying the FM signal, KQED snapped it up for just $62,000. And what began as a classical music station operating out of a Victorian on Divisadero Street in San Francisco has morphed over the years into one of the leading news and information stations in the United States. And of course, there were a lot of twists and turns along the way. And here with us to take a look back and a listen forward, or maybe it's the other way around, a listen back and a look forward, our KQED Public Radio's station manager, Joanne Wallace. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also our executive director of news and public affairs, Raul Ramirez. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Fun to be interviewing my bosses. Joanne, take us...
Fun to be here.
Take us back to 1969. I know you weren't there, but KQED TV was up and running, and it was an educational channel primarily.
KQED's parent company was called, not KQED Incorporated, but Bay Area Educational Television, and it had been founded in 1954. So, in fact, KQED Channel 9 is this year 55 years old. The San Francisco Chronicle strike had happened in 1968, and Newsroom had been created on Channel 9 in that year in response to the strike with a real promise of extending coverage, news coverage, local coverage. Out of the blue, Theological Seminary, based in San Anselmo, which had owned an FM station for a number of years, KXKX, as you said, 110,000-watt FM non-commercial station.
That's a big station, a big signal.
It's a huge station. It's the station that we operate today. Approached the president of Bay Area Educational Television, that is KQED-TV, Jim Day, and offered to sell to this FM station. Jim Day had been an NBC war correspondent during the Second World War, working for radio, and a journalist. And he was very excited about the possibility of owning a public radio station. And I have to say that this all occurred in the context of public radio really beginning to take off in the United States. National Public Radio was incorporated in 1970. The first station manager of KQED Radio, after the decision was finally made to acquire the station, the first station manager, Bernard Mays, was the first chair of the National Public Radio Board of Directors.
So the timing was fortuitous on our end to get into the news business, although we should say we didn't initially. It wasn't really a news format at the beginning.
It was not a news format. It was a very eclectic program schedule, more like, I would say, the Pacifica stations in terms of a variety of different kinds of programming, a variety of different kinds of music and public affairs.
Well, and over the course of 40 years, we've had a lot of people come through the halls of KQED, and one of them is able to join us now for just a few minutes, and we wanted to bring him in. Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, who began here. Kai, you were an intern when I got here in 1998.
You bet. I didn't know anything about radio when I started there.
What brought you here?
Well, it's a long, long story, but I wanted to get into news and I wanted to get into radio, and KQED seemed like a great place to try. And I know I've told you this story. I wrote the station a letter and said, listen, I'm really interested in news. I don't know anything about journalism, but can you help me out? And Cyrus Musiker, who was then the senior editor for news, took pity on me, I think, and brought me up and said, listen, why don't we start you off on an internship? And literally, KQED taught me everything I know about radio, how to hold a microphone, how to do an interview, how to cut tape, everything I learned right there.
And you were in J School, the journalism school at Berkeley at one.
I was at KQED for a while, and then I figured I had to go to journalism school to learn how to be a journalist. That eventually turned out not to be true, as it happens. And I was accepted back at KQED after about 6 months away at Berkeley.
Now, you're hosting, of course, you left here in what year did you leave here, Kai?
Left there in spring of 2001 and came down here to Marketplace, did the Marketplace Morning Report, which is the overnight broadcast, and then 4 years ago came on to the afternoon show.
And I remember talking to you about your 12 a.m. to 9 o'clock shift.
Yeah.
So you made that transition. With the economy being what it is, what is your job like these days?
It is fascinating every single day. I'm relieved to say that I'm not as terrified as we all were in September and October, not knowing what was around the corner. But it's a great opportunity to be in business journalism, and it's a great opportunity to be in radio. And every day, almost literally every day, I say, wow, I'd have never thought of this 10 years ago at KQED.
How often do you come across people that you worked with or that you knew from KQED in what you're doing now?
Oh, all the time. I mean, everybody from David Brancaccio, my predecessor here at Marketplace, to folks like Jason Beaubien, who's now in Mexico City for NPR. I mean, the sheer number of people who've gone on to network-level jobs through KQED and the newsroom there and the training program there is remarkable.
Well, Kai, I know you've got to leave us, but we're proud to say you're an alum, and we appreciate you taking some time to talk with us this morning.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Great to talk to you. Joanne and Raul, great to talk to you guys, too.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice to hear you.
Bye-bye. All right, Kai, thanks a lot. And I really do think that the internship program that KQED has had is one of the best things we do in public radio, Raul.
You know, Kai was very kind and neglected to mention that was an unpaid internship, a longstanding public broadcasting tradition that continues to this day. We have excellent interns from all over the world, really. People who want, of course, they want to be here in part because it is San Francisco, but in part because it is KQED, and they understand that here they will have an opportunity to receive some training, but the opportunity to do real journalism. And we could not do the work that we do now were it not for the presence and the support of very talented interns.
Yep. Joanne, we were talking before Kai came on about the birth of KQED Public Radio, and it was not an easy decision, was it, for the KQED folks to buy this FM station? Why was it so difficult, do you think?
I think because of the ups and downs of the economy of KQED television and Bay Area educational television. It was not an easy thing to start a public television station in the Bay Area, even though the station had tremendous community support. And the thought of adding an additional station and additional activities to support was daunting at the time. Those who were around, Jim Day once told me that they went back and forth a lot about whether to acquire the station, the radio station, and eventually did. And he never regretted it. He never looked back.
And at that time, how much government funding was there for public broadcasting? Because I know it's changed dramatically.
But it has changed dramatically. In the early days, most of the government funding that was appropriated for public broadcasting, at least on the public radio side, actually went to National Public Radio. In the mid-'80s, there was a change in the way the structure of the funding was structured. And instead of funding going directly to National Public Radio or any other national network, public radio network, it began to go to the public radio stations directly. So almost all of the public broadcasting funding comes to public radio and public television stations individually at the local level.
I want to fast forward a little bit to around that time, the mid-'80s and a little bit later, and you were here at that time and decided that you wanted to change the format of KQED Public Radio from classical to news and information.
I actually came in 1990,
in
the fall of 1990, and my good fortune was that in 1987, there had been some research done on what the possible formats for KQED radio might be. The station had been, through the 1980s, a primarily classical music station with Morning Edition and All Things Considered bookended at each end of the day. George Bailey, who was an audience researcher working with public radio at the time, recommended that KQED in San Francisco become the first public radio station to go all news and information. And our sources tell us that KQED Radio also is the first station, commercial or non-commercial, to go all news and information. And the unusual thing about it was that FM was considered at the time by broadcasters to be primarily a music medium.
And at that time, we were going up against, well, you still are, but it was a little daunting, I imagine, to think about going up against KCBS and KGO, who were and still are, you know, the giants in the Bay Area in terms of news and information. So how did you decide what the niche would be?
Well, the niche would be depth and non-commercial. The news and information programming would not be interrupted every 8 to 10 minutes with commercials because of our non-commercial status. And the real focus was on depth and on continuing coverage.
Now, Raul, at that time, you were in the print business.
I was in the print business, and you will hear it here first. And that I actually, when there is a format change in the radio station, people who are fans of the existing format become very angry. And they, in terms of public broadcasting, they terminate their membership. And one of the people who terminated the KQED radio membership at the time of the change to news and public affairs was me. And within a week, I regained my senses and I reinstated my – but I was unhappy.
And did you tell them that during the job interview?
I conveniently neglected to mention that. But I did join the staff about a year to 18 months after Joanne came here. I was one of her early hires. And I really was intrigued by the notion of coming from a metropolitan newspaper to public radio. I was not sure that radio was a great medium for news or for writing, which I love. And I very quickly learned that not only was it a great medium for news and for writing, but it was a fantastic room for location for voices, for conversation. And
storytelling.
And I expected to be here for a year or two, and that was 17 years ago.
Joanne, Raul alluded to the reaction of some who were really devoted to the format as it was. What was that like? What kind of reaction was there?
Tony Tiano, who was the president and CEO of KQED at the time, told me that he had never experienced board meetings, KQED board meetings, of the kind that happened during the format change. They received thousands and thousands of letters from people unhappy about KQED changing from classical music to all news, even though there were two other classical music stations here in San Francisco at the time. But
and that lingered for a while.
It did linger for a while.
Yeah. And of course, in terms of the ratings, it's an undisputed success because the audience size doubled.
It has more than tripled.
Tripled.
When the station changed format in the summer of 1987, at the very tail end of the gavel-to-gavel Iran-Contra hearings, which KQED was broadcasting, the next Monday, the station changed format. The audience size at the time was 260,000 listeners a week, and it's more than 800,000 listeners a week at this time.
And that continues to grow, although with the economy, I think it's maybe it tends to ebb and flow, really, depending on what's happening in the world. When there are big news events, more people tend to listen.
I think this is probably true of any news and information station, but it's certainly true in public radio. The audience growth over the last year has been remarkable, and audiences for public radio across the nation are up 6% from 07 to 08.
And as you said, Joanne, although we didn't have not anywhere near the news staff that we have now. Back then, I want to play a clip from 1989, and we had a reporter at the time named Betsy Bea, and she was reporting on the earthquake, the Loma Prieta earthquake, which I remember well, October 17th, 1989. Let's listen.
At the playground of Macapin School, children played as if it was any other school day, even though only 60% of the students showed up. But inside classrooms, today's lesson was different than a normal school day, a review of earthquake safety.
Now, when we find a gas leak and we have no idea where where we turn it off, what should we do?
Call
In Judy Lampier's fifth-grade class, students talked about earthquakes all morning and read to each other about their experiences from their daily journals.
Dear Journal, Tuesday was a day I'll never forget. The earth shook very violently. I felt a lot of aftershakes, too. Everyone in my family thought the whole world would just burst. My grandma's heart was beating very fast. I'll never forget this week.
This is going to be one World Series I will never forget. Also, some of the marina houses caught on fire. I think that I am very lucky to still be here.
P.S. The Bay Bridge broke in half.
I remember being at Candlestick Park when the earthquake happened. And in fact, KGO was reporting that the bridge had broken in half. Bit of an exaggeration. Talk to us, Raul, about, you know, every morning we have news meetings here, and we discuss how we're going to cover issues, whether it's a huge issue like the earthquake or last week Michael Jackson's death. How do you, as someone in charge of news, one of the people in charge of news, how do you go about thinking about the news, and how is it different, do you imagine, than they think about it at KCBS, KGO, or your old Examiner, the newspaper you used to work for?
The conversations, though, that we have in looking at a potential story have to do with what the impact of what has occurred or what we're looking at might be. We think in terms of why it is that the news event has occurred or we expect will occur. That is the whys and the therefores of the news stories. We are less interested in simply telling you what has happened without going on to tell you why it has happened and what you can do about it as you look ahead. We don't say it in so many words because it's no longer necessary. We have a core of journalists in our newsroom, producers and reporters and editors and hosts who understand that this is part of what our mission is. The other set of questions that we ask is who the stakeholders are in these stories and how can we get their voices and their perspectives into the stories. You cannot do it with every story, but over time you can do it with any story, and that's really what we aim to do.
We talked earlier in the hour with Kai Rizdahl, who was an intern here at KQED, and another one of our interns from the 1990s is on the line with us, Jason Beaubien, who has gone on to work for NPR. Earlier he was in Africa now. Jason, where are you this morning? Mexico City, I imagine.
I'm in Mexico City. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, nice to hear from you. And, of course, I hear your voice more often than you hear mine. And I'm here with Joanne and Raul Ramirez. Tell us a little bit about your path through radio and how it began here at KQED and what you learned.
Hi, Joanne. Hi, Raul.
Greetings.
Hello, Jason.
Yes, I was an intern there, and I used to cut up the newspaper and put it into little files. That's what we used to do back in the early 90s. I was going to San Francisco State. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I was an English major, and I ended up as an intern in the newsroom there at KQED, and I just loved it. I mean, it was this wonderful place to be. You'd come and you'd sort of peer through the glass and see who was on forum that morning. And, you know, maybe it was some politician or I think Salman Rushdie came through while I was there. I mean, it was always sort of exciting to see what was going on in there and to get sort of sent out and go out and talk to people in the streets. I just found that I loved it. And, obviously it's become what I do. And, yeah, I got my start there.
I still remember the day that you left. You went to WBUR, and Joanne gave a tribute to you in front of all the staff. And Joanne, at the time, you pointed out what an extraordinary storyteller Jason is and still is.
Jason, I remember the stories from the years that you were a reporter here, the stories of homeless people collecting various things to either recycle for pocket money or things that would actually improve their lives. And you're spending time with them, including overnight stays with homeless people in homeless encampments around the city. Really extraordinary storytelling.
Jason, you didn't get a chance to do a lot of international coverage here, although there are a lot of communities, of course, from around the world. But how did you gravitate toward Africa and then and now Central America and Mexico?
I mean, to some degree, it's part of what I was interested in doing at KQED was sort of telling stories of people who don't get a whole lot of coverage and sort of bringing to the audience for KQED or for NPR voices and stories that might otherwise get overlooked. And particularly in Africa, that was an incredible opportunity there to go out and tell stories from that continent that, you know, just don't get covered very much. Here in Mexico City, I'm just always wishing I could be doing more in terms of getting on the air more and getting more stories out, just because there's so much, so many rich stories here. At the moment, I'm just monitoring the Honduran situation. The logistics of it were that I couldn't really get in there until late today, and so sort of trying to cover that coup from Mexico City, which is a little bit difficult and not exactly the way I like to tell a story, but that's what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's this desire to tell stories that aren't getting told a lot. And KQED gave me an opportunity to do that right from the beginning, and it was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Same question to you, Jason, that I put to Kai, which is, you know, I remember so many folks who've come through the internship program like you did and have gone on to other things. Tamara Keith, who works for NPR from time to time and Marketplace. Rachel Martin, who's gone on to ABC Television. Do you run across a lot of folks from KQED in what you're doing, even down there in Mexico City?
Down in Mexico City.
Or at least over the years. That'll be an easier question.
But over the years, yeah. I mean, there's sort of this incredible alumni from the KQED internship program. They're sort of spread out all over the at least over the U.S. and other places as well. It was a great opportunity, and there were a lot of really amazing people that came through there, and some of them didn't stay in journalism. They went on to do other things. It was this place where people were attracted, I think, because KQED, you know, is this place of ideas and this place where people who are, you know, want to be engaged in the public affairs and sort of the issues of the day were attracted there and have come through that station, and yeah, now we're sort of all over the place.
Yeah, and you know, Raul, it is extraordinary when you look through the applications for the internship now, even, and the level of experience and skill that people have, and you wonder, you know, why are they willing to come here to work for free, basically? And it is because of what Jason's describing. It really is just a privilege, or it's exciting to be working in a place like this.
You know, I teach journalism students at San Francisco State, and what I hear back from students is that often when they go on internships, they feel as if they're being treated as gophers and not really treated with respect. Every intern who comes here is treated with respect and is expected to also act with respect for the institution and the values that we represent, and they all live up to it. And it's a wonderful social contract that we have. We are not able to pay with money, then we pay with respect and training where we can offer it.
All right. Well, Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Good to talk with you. Stay safe down there, and we'll look forward to more reporting on the coup in Honduras.
Okay. Well, it's good to talk to all of you, and yeah, great to hear your voices.
All right, Jason, take care.
Take care, Jason.
And we have much more to talk about in the coming half hour, including some of the challenges in public radio these days as everyone is struggling with the recession. Our guests, Joanne Wallace, our station manager, and Raul Ramirez, who is in charge of public affairs and news for us here. And if you'd like to join us, the number to call is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. And as always, you can email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. And joining me, Joanne Wallace, KQED Public Radio Station Manager and our Executive Director of News and Public Affairs, Raul Ramirez. And we're celebrating a birthday, KQED's 40th birthday, give or take a few days. I think June 25th was actually the day. But we're talking about the history of KQED and some of the challenges that public radio is facing today in this tough economy. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about what you hear? What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of on KQED Public Radio? 866-733 is the number to call. 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. And as always, you can forward your thoughts to us by email. It's forum@kqed.org. We've seen a lot of changes at KQED, and not the least of which is technology, Joanne. When I got here, as Jason talked about cutting up the newspapers, we don't really do that anymore, but I remember cutting the tape with razor blades. The digital transition has been huge.
The World Wide Web and live streaming online has extended what used to be prescribed by your broadcast signal for broadcasters in general, and especially for KQED radio, to be basically a global service. Our primary audience is here in Northern California, but as listeners to Forum know, Forum listeners are all over the world, and you will hear from a listener in Longview, Texas, or Cleveland, Ohio, or Atlanta, Georgia, on occasion calling into Forum because they're listening either via the internet or on Sirius satellite radio.
And Raul, what as a news director or a director of executive director of news and public affairs, what do you see? How do you look at the internet now as something to augment what we do and maybe allow us to do things we couldn't have done?
Well, the internet has transformed the way we do what we do, how we do our research, how we distribute the information that we have, increasingly not only through streaming but also through archiving and podcasting and other forms of distribution. And as we look ahead, increasingly the internet and the online world are going to be a part of what we do and how we deliver to our audiences the work that we do and the journalism that we produce. We are on the threshold of a transformation, both institutionally, but also in the context of what is occurring in the world of news and information in, worldwide. We are looking at, of course, evolving in the context of radio and the presentation of radio, but we also internally and externally are engaged in multiple discussions about how it is that the mission of public broadcasting, as evident, as stated at KQED, can be served not only on our air, but on in a multi-platform world. How we can adapt and how we can improve and frankly, how we can stay connected with audiences, new audiences that are not really necessarily turning to us on live radio, that may be turning to us in other ways.
And, you know, television, of course, has also been transformed by this iReporting, you know, where people are sending in their own video from their cell phones. We've seen that most recently in Iran, coming out of Iran. Do you foresee that happening in radio? We of course take listener comments, and we do get audio from other folks, but not that often. Do you see something happening that might transform radio in the same way that TV has been transformed?
It will transform the journalism that we do and the programming that we do. Absolutely. And yes, I see it happening increasingly. We are, as I just mentioned, in terms of having conversations, part of those conversations, an important part of those conversations, is how we can move ahead to engage our listeners, the citizens in general, underrepresented, people from underrepresented communities who are not necessarily represented in great numbers on the internet or on our air. How are we able to extend what the online world makes possible? And we are beginning to experiment with various ways, but the answer is absolutely yes.
Let's go to the phones now. Peter is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Peter. Welcome.
Hi, it's Peter Warfield from Library Users Association. The KQED, of course, does wonderful things and is good on national and state news, but unfortunately local news as an ongoing project seems to be almost non-existent. And while Michael Krasny is a local program, it's one of the only ones, and he can be excellent, but it's rather limited. Ongoing information about, for example, supervisors and their programs or about particular departments in the city are unfortunately just not consistently covered at all.
Raul, of course, we used to cover it better than we do. Budget cuts have certainly eaten into the kind of coverage we can do of local news. So what are your thoughts about Peter's question?
We used to cover it more frequently than we do. But Peter, I don't think we've ever been in the position of really covering any one political jurisdiction as intensely as I know what we would want to, and perhaps you would want to as well. In other words, when you say supervisors, which county are we talking about? Which city are we talking about? There are so many of them that we simply do not have the ability to cover all. We do look to project our coverage around the Bay Area. So when we identify an issue that involves one political jurisdiction, one city, one county, one issue, that we can look at it in the context of how it provides insight to others. One of the conversations that we are having both mainly internally at this point, but externally as well, is how can we incorporate more intensive coverage of local news, really local news of the kind that Peter is talking about, at a time when newspapers are retrenching in the coverage they are doing. How can we use the internet, for example, as a means of covering this? How can we enroll citizens and inform specialists and others who can help us really drill into what the supervisors in whichever county we are talking about, or the council members, or the departments in which city we're talking about, and be able to consolidate and present that information? We are talking about it. We are thinking about it. We know that it's missing, but it's not only a result of the tightening of our financial belt that we are seeing. It's just the reality of, you know, too much to cover, not enough to do it with.
But Joanne, we have had to make some difficult decisions in the past few months based on a downturn in the economy.
We have, and KQED across the company reduced its budget in February by about 13.5%. Radio's reduction was sort of in the mid-range of those cuts, not the deepest and not the lightest. It meant that we needed to relook at what we did with KQED Radio News and concentrate our staffing and our news production in afternoon drive. So we have done that. Quest Radio Report, which reports weekly on environmental and science stories, continues on Monday mornings at 6:30 and 8:30. The Do List with Cy Musiker, Cy was mentioned a little earlier, and David Wiegand from the San Francisco Chronicle appears on Friday mornings at 6:30 and 8:30, and the Perspective series continues as well.
And let's not forget the California
and Report. And the California Report, exactly.
All right. Peter, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 866-733-6786. Let's go now to Doris, who's on the line in Berkeley. Hi, Doris.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for giving us this chance. This is really great. First, I just love everything KQED does, and I recognize the financial constraints you're under. But I do pray that Pacific Time might be reinstated at some point soon, because it's urgently ongoing, and in an ongoing way, it's urgently important that we keep abreast of Pacific Rim issues, since we are on the Pacific Rim.
And
I'm hoping that maybe Nong Quy Duc might do a remote broadcast. He's right there, isn't he, in Vietnam now?
He is over in Vietnam. He left a few years ago. And Joanne, that was another tough decision, canceling Pacific Time a few years ago. And Nguyen Quy Duc had left, and Wan Ha was hiring, and we had hired her and was hosting the show. Talk about that decision.
It's true, and again, it was a decision reluctantly taken again because of financial considerations. What we have asked Juan to do in particular is to look at stories that connect the Asia Pacific and the Bay Area and Northern California, and she has done a lot of reporting about connections between the Asia Pacific and our immediate area. It is not the same, Doris. And Doris, I appreciate your comments about Pacific Time. We miss the program as well. It's not the same as having a weekly half-hour program as Pacific Time was in production. But it is part of the effort to bring that connection, that international and national connection of Asia and our connection with it.
Doris, I thank you for the call. We over the years, of course, many people come through the corridors of KQED on a regular basis. Often they come here to sit and have a conversation with Michael Krasny, who's been hosting Forum for how many years now?
Since 1993.
1993. And it so happened that one day I happened to be filling in for Michael Krasny back in 1995, and an author came through who was not well known at the time. He'd written a book, a memoir, called Dreams of My Father. His name was Barack Obama. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
I would like to see from our African-American leadership a return to the tradition that I think Dr. King represented, that Frederick Douglass represented. And that is a tradition that says we can embrace colorblind principles and colorblind values, but we also recognize that race does matter, and that that's one of the most important forces in the society. But we can still reach out and establish common ground with other groups.
I remember that interview so well, and I remember, I wish I'd asked him on the air, Raul, but after the interview was over, he was a community organizer at the time, and I asked him if he'd ever thought about running for office. And he said, yeah, I'm thinking about it. But we do have an extraordinary number of people who come through here and share their stories with us. And Michael, of course, for the last 16 years has been primarily Michael talking with those folks. And it really is a great way to have a conversation, but also to give insights into so many different realms of our world.
And there are reasons for people's desire and willingness to be on our air. They know that there will be sometimes tough questions that will be asked, as they should be. But they also know that the emphasis that we place not only on our talk shows but on all the coverage that we do, on fairness, on accuracy, on a civil conversation, a civic conversation as well, but a civil conversation. On diversity of voices, I think that people are reassured that that they will be, again, I go back to that word, respected, and that their ideas will be respected, even where there may be some debate on it. So, you know, we're gratified that most of the time, most of the people we invite to be on our air are quite willing to come and engage in a conversation.
And it sells books.
And it sells. That's true. Very frequently I talk to both experienced or rather well-known authors and new authors, and they all say that a conversation with you, with Michael Krasny, results in people coming to their readings in greater numbers and so on. It's the audience that we have.
It is very well educated. Let's go back to the phones. Quinley, I believe it is on the line in New York City, listening, I presume, on satellite. Hi, Quinley.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a big fan of the station. Quick question. A lot of stations are moving toward automation in terms of the difference of having a live person like the folks that you have in the morning and in the afternoon versus something that's just pre-recorded and then you go to the network. Is that something that KQED is planning in the future, that they may phase out their professional on-air staff and go to automation as a way of saving money and balancing the budget?
Joanne?
Quinley, we have gone to automation in a part of our schedule from 11 o'clock in the evening until 5 o'clock in the morning. The station is automated and operated by a broadcast system called Dalet. And our announcer operators record information for that schedule, which appears in the breaks in the programs. And I think I want to compliment them. They do a magnificent job of seamlessly putting information into the program schedule for listeners.
We should also point out there are risks to going to automation. I mean, right now we do that overnight for a segment of the overnight. And, of course, if something disastrous happened, God forbid there were an earthquake, I mean, we'd have to cope with that. But there are choices that you have to make when there are budget considerations.
It's true. The audience overnight is much, much smaller than our audiences either during the day or on the weekends. And the decision was a tough one and not one that we took with any relish at all, but it was one that was necessary over the last year.
Quinley, thanks for the call. We've got some email messages as well. There's one from, looks like, Donnie in Cotati, who writes, my mornings don't feel complete unless I listen to Forum. I'd like to hear more interviews with new local talent, musicians, poetry, writers. What's happening in the Bay Area? We do try to strike that balance. There's so many interesting people in the Bay Area.
We do. And often the interviews with artists and writers, musicians, performers, theater directors occur in the 10 o'clock hour of Forum, with the 9 o'clock hour tending to be a little more news focused.
866-733-6786 is the number. We've got another email here from Jamie in Oakland who writes, in the last few years, KQED seems to be following NPR in dramatically increasing its live coverage of more and more events, almost none of which has the truly historic significance that I think should be required for you to preempt your superb ordinary programming. What's the logic behind this decision, and do you plan to continue this expansion? Raul. We did that most recently, I know, with the gay marriage ruling at the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court. What's the criteria for doing that?
Well, I'm not sure if the question has to do with live coverage of a breaking news event or if it has to do with live coverage of an event such as the upcoming Supreme Court nominee hearings.
I think you're right. It's probably both, but the writer does refer to hearings like for on Iraq and that sort of thing.
We do hear from listeners who think that when we go to live coverage of something like the Supreme Court nominee hearings, that they would prefer to have some other kind of programs. And we hear from listeners who say they appreciate the opportunity firsthand to hear news and history in the making. The decision is really made on that basis. There are a couple of levels that we use and really Joanne uses. One is if the President of the United States is making a significant announcement or what we expect will be a significant announcement or is holding a press conference, we will most likely go to it live whenever it occurs. Then the other events will relate perhaps to hearings, like going back to the Iran-Contra hearings in our institutional history, to Supreme Court nomination hearings, to hearings on important issues of policy where there is a dispute or at least where there are important differences of opinion, whether to go to war, debates in Congress over significant commitments of public resources or the lives of our citizens.
And I think, Joanne, it's fair to say that when the Sotomayor hearings begin, we'll be broadcasting those live.
This is a good chance to forward promote. We are expecting those hearings to begin on Monday, July 13th, and extend for a few days, two or three days across that period. And we will record and delay the hearings so they begin at 9 o'clock in the morning and extend through the afternoon.
And you do get reaction, both pro and con, I imagine, whenever you change the format.
We mostly get positive reaction to coverage of the hearings. Those hearings that we do broadcast, and we broadcast the major ones, as Raul said, Supreme Court nominees, key cabinet nominations, for example, all of the presidential press conferences where reporters have a chance to really put the president, you know, on the spot with questions that are skeptical and probing. We do broadcast all of those.
Raul.
We do try to blend what we do with newscasts that will keep the audience abreast of breaking news events as well. But it is important to remember what the mission of public broadcasting is, and that in part we are an alternative to the usual way of presenting news. We do present news the usual way many times, and we have programs such as Forum that in terms of format may be the usual way, but what the content is becomes very different. So part of what we do is we say we respect our audiences enough to present this alternate information, understanding that some people may choose not to listen to that, but they will come back because they know that over time they're going to be finding something that is unique that flows from that very same mission.
We referred a moment ago to the California Report, which is at least 12 years old now, I think.
It went on the air October 2nd, 1995.
95. Wow. 14, yeah. You think I would know that. I used to host the morning and the afternoon. Now I host just the afternoon. Rachel Myro, of course, hosts the morning. And we've seen that expand quite a bit over the years. We now have bureaus in Los Angeles, Sacramento, and in Fresno.
Well, the growth of the California Report has really been remarkable. It began as a Monday morning broadcast and a Friday afternoon half-hour news magazine and quickly expanded into five mornings a week with news from all over the state. We have collaborations with public radio stations across the state. And as you said, we have bureaus in Los Angeles, in Fresno, and in Sacramento, bringing news and information and real depth about coverage of statewide issues.
And we have a short clip from another one of our former KQED interns who was the bureau chief in Fresno for a while, Tamara Keith. She's now moved back east to Washington. But let's just hear a little bit of a story she filed. This is a profile of farmer and writer David Moss Masumoto. It originally aired in 2003.
Rain hits the shingles on the large covered porch that leads up to David Moss Masumoto's farmhouse. From the porch, he can see 90-year-old raisin vineyards his family has tended since before he was born. In the distance, there are rows of peach trees waiting to be shaped by Masumoto's pruning shears. The fruits of the fields and the stories behind them are something this 49-year-old farmer has made a life's work of sharing with others.
We make our decisions around food based on memories. If we remember what a great tasting peach is like, then people will like my peaches because they may not look the prettiest, but they have that.
David Moss Masumoto, a very eloquent writer from the Central Valley, and that profile from Tamara Keith. And, you know, I'm proud of KQED's commitment to the Central Valley because there are so many good stories there. Sasha Coca now is our bureau chief there. And, you know, a lot of people, especially on the coasts in the Bay Area, don't necessarily – they think of the Central Valley as a very homogenous place where we only grow agriculture. We grow, you know, fruit and vegetables and so on. But there's so much more that goes on there, and it's great to hear those kinds of stories from Tamara and Sasha Coca.
It is. And, you know, what we find is almost counterintuitive. You would think that people in San Diego would not be very interested in what occurs in the Central Valley. A couple of years ago, we had a series of stories on water issues with a focus on not only water, but water and land use issues in the Central Valley. And we offer them to stations around the state as we distribute the California Report to more than 24 stations. And we found that KPBS, the San Diego public radio station, reported a great deal of interest and broadcast the programs more than once. Other stations reported equal interest. In a lot of ways, it's not what the topic is or what the geography of the topic is, but whether or not you treat it in such a way that makes it both accessible, interesting, and relevant to people. And in that sense, we certainly strive to do that. And at least with those programs, I think we got there.
I think another interesting thing to say is that Sasha's reporting for and before her reporting, Tamara Keith's reporting from the Fresno Bureau, very often not only was heard on the California Report, but also on All Things Considered or Morning Edition. The national editors at National Public Radio realized the importance of the Central Valley, the people in the Central Valley, the influx of population from the coasts into the Central Valley as people moved to less expensive housing in California and moved for jobs as well.
And I think a piece of hers is on NPR today, either Morning Edition or it was on this morning. Yeah. About again about water.
Yeah.
In the scent water use. We've got an email here from Ralph in Santa Rosa who writes, "I both enjoy and depend on KQED Radio for news and entertainment much more than the television station. When I send my twice yearly support check, I don't know if it will go for radio or TV. Is there a way to earmark my contribution for KQED Public Radio, Joanne?"
There is a way to earmark it. If you're interested in contributing to public radio, KQED Public Radio, you can put that on your check. If you want to split your contribution and you have 50% to KQED Radio and 50% to KQED Television or our sister station, KTH Television, you can indicate that on your check.
And we
as
won't
well.
Complain, will we?
We will not.
Let's go back to the phones. And Janice is on the line in Lafayette. Hi, Janice.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just am calling to compliment and say how this whole program, the whole station, every program that you have has enriched my life. Due to budget reasons, I gave up cable TV 3 years ago. I missed it for 2 weeks, and I can't imagine ever going back to television, especially for news, because in radio, it's so much more layered and interesting in the fact that it takes on an old, Yeah, it's like storytelling. Before there was TV, there was storytelling, and it's so much more enriching and unbiased, in my opinion. And I just wanted to call to say how much I appreciate that your station exists and all the programs that you have are wonderful.
Janice, thank you for that. I agree with you. I think information and storytelling and news that's delivered by the human voice is really quite extraordinary. You can hear a smile on a newscaster's face. You can hear a smile on one of our announcer operators' face as that person delivers information and promotion, forward promotion. You can hear the intelligence of Michael Krasny, Scott Schaefer, Dave Iverson, and others who host Forum as they ask questions, some prepared in advance and some off the cuff, following what the conversation has been. And you can really hear that on radio.
Janice, thanks. Thanks so much for the call. And we were talking about funding earlier, Joanne. And of course, we're blessed with listeners who support us. We get about 60% of our funding from listeners here on the radio. How has corporate support been doing? And there's been some concern expressed in some of the email about sort of a creeping corporate presence in our, I think it's fair to say more on TV than radio, but what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think those are really two separate questions. Corporate support in public broadcasting is down, as advertising for all media is down across the country. I'm glad to say that membership support for KQED is really quite strong. And it's been a truism in public broadcasting that members would hang in there with a public broadcasting station, whether radio or television, in a recessionary period. And in fact, that has turned out to be true. The January pledge drive for KQED Radio was historic. We raised close to $2.4 million. And in the last pledge drive, we raised about $2.3
million. Raul, there's also a concern in commercial broadcasting about how the commercial advertisers influence the coverage. What does KQED do to create sort of a firewall in that regard?
We do have a very sturdy firewall, and they are dependent with respect to corporate underwriters. There is absolutely no relationship between our marketing colleagues. I shouldn't say no relationship between them as colleagues, but in terms of the work that they do doing outreach and placing underwriting credits, and our newsroom. We often don't know invariably, we don't know what corporate underwriting is going to be credited during the particular program. With respect to how we raise money from other sources, we do look at our editorial goals and then look to see where we can find the money to support it.
I should add very quickly that trust is our most important part of our relationship with our listeners. And listeners can hear in a station or a program if there is difficulty in terms of influence.
All right. Station manager Joanne Wallace, thanks so much for joining us this hour. And also thanks to Raul Ramirez, our executive director of news and public affairs. And as always, thanks to our listeners for your email and calls and just for paying attention to us this morning. Forum is produced by Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor, Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is with us this morning, Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. I'm Scott Schaefer, and for Michael Krasny, thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.